Afternoon, everyone. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. The meeting audio will be placed on vamara.com as we generally do for all the webs, all the AAC, BRS, and Metro Access Subcommittee meetings. At this time, I will take the roll call of the committee members. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Oops. Darnese Bush. I will step back for a moment and I'll restart the roster. Anyone joining through phone call, you can mute and unmute yourself by pressing star six. So if you're calling via phone call, please feel free to press star six to tell me if you're present on the call. I'll restart the roster for today, Monday, July 13th, 2020, for the bus rail subcommittee meeting. Elver Ariza Silva, Darnese Bush, Tino Calabia, Vanessa Coles, Charlie Crawford. I know Charlie's not going to join us today, so Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Mary Kay McMahon.
Here.
Philippa Mazzell. Anthony Oberg.
Hello, I'm here.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Semina. While doing the roll call, I think I saw Darnese Bush joining.
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening. So that concludes the roll call for today. At this time, I will read the meeting agenda for the record. We have done the roll call. We will review the meeting agenda and approve the agenda accordingly. Afterwards, the meeting minutes from last month's meeting will be approved. We do have Donald Goins as the guest speaker today to give us update about rail announcements. We do have Robin Hahn on the call with us. She is joining us to give us an update about the inter-rail car barriers. We're also going to have guest speakers to give us some information about scooter hubs. David Goodman is going to join us for that. The committee discussion will be about sidewalks availability leading to metro stations, followed by ombudsman report. If we have any public comment, that'll be done afterwards. The committee will discuss the new old business and work plan updates, and the meeting will adjourn at 6 p.m. That is the agenda for today's meeting. As I mentioned earlier, anyone joining through phone call, you can mute and unmute yourself by pressing star six. You can also raise hands and lower hands on phone calls by pressing star nine. That will indicate us that you are trying to make a comment, and you'll have the time to make your comment at that point.
Anu?
Yes.
Anu? Yeah, at some point in the meeting, at your choice, mm-hmm. I'd like to provide an update on NextBus, because it seems to now have fallen out of use. Partially, some days it works and some days it doesn't. So if nothing else, I'd like to make that for the record. and perhaps that can be followed up.
Sure, Steve, thank you. And perhaps we can take that during public comment.
Okay, sure.
Okay. And for anyone joining through the video conference, you, as you know, you can click on the speaker to mute and unmute yourself, and you can click on the hand to raise hands and lower hands. We do have the ASL's interpreters with us. So please, anytime you speak, please state your name first and then your comment. It does help them, and it also helps us for the records and anyone listening on the phone call. At this point, I will give the floor to Vice Chair Oberg, and please.
Okay. I guess the first thing we had is Tino here? Did he join us or no?
I have not seen him yet.
Okay. So I think the first thing.
This is Darnie's. I move that we accept the agenda as read.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to accept the previous meeting's minutes as written. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion's carried. We can move on.
Anthony, as a suggestion, what we might want to do is say, if there are no objections, we will accept the motion as made. That way okay. It's quicker, since we don't have to mute and unmute all the time.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Okay, let me see if I can...
Oh, shall we accept the agenda too?
Oh, yes, we have to do the agenda too. So if
that's
no
what
one...
That's what we just accepted. We haven't done the minutes yet.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. So we have the...
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Latino? Hey.
Yes. Just... Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you, Tino.
I can either see and barely hear what's going on.
Okay. I was just going through, we were going to accept the meeting minutes from last week, if you want to take over, or last month.
Why don't you do that, and I'll see if I can get this thing to get louder.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, so...
How do you think it get louder?
Tino, we can hear you very well.
But if you're having trouble hearing us, you might need to, I'm assuming you might need to increase the volume of your speakers, perhaps.
In previous meetings, he's had to log out, leave the meeting, and then log back in, and the second time was the charm.
Right, and Tino, if it doesn't work, you might have to log out and then rejoin the meeting.
Do it again? Do it again?
If you're still having trouble, yes.
Okay, Anthony can take over on the review in the minutes.
Okay.
Move we accept the minutes as written.
This is Darnie's, I second.
Okay, the motion has been moved and seconded. If there are no objections, can I get a vote to approve these minutes?
Yes, aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, I think we can accept these minutes.
Great.
Should we wait for Tino as he's trying to get back in, or should we move on to the next thing on the agenda?
Well, we have rail announcements update on the agenda, and we do have Donald Goings with us. So we can continue, and I'm sure Tino will be able to join.
Okay, let's do that. Mr. Goings, if you don't mind.
Okay, no, I do not mind. I think the last time I was with you, the importance of the sequencing and the clarity of announcements is one of the issues that was brought up. Now, the previous announcement, what we did was we eliminated the 7000 series car. That's the first thing known would come out. And that has been removed when the 7K barriers were installed. So you no longer hear the 7, you know, you no longer hear, this is a 7000 series car. It moves on to door opening. Step back to allow customers to enter. When boarding, please move to the center of the car. This is a blank, blank line train to where, to blank, blank. The next stop is, and tell you the next station. Okay, so with that, do we have any questions, concerns about that particular, the sequencing and clarity of the announcements at the platform?
Could I, may I just ask a question?
Certainly.
This is Steve Caffin, and I remember that Patrick, several meetings back, and I think others have raised the question of that second announcement, which is, would you read that again? It's the long one. It says step back.
Allow customers to enter.
And the second, and after that, when boarding,
please move to the center of the car.
Right. You know, that's been playing now for about 15 years, I think. And there's a question whether either that is truly necessary, that is, people are not focusing on that announcement at the time it's made, or if WMATA feels that it truly is necessary, it might be relegated to later on in the announcement process, so the key announcements at least get made first. You know, I think we might have discussed that with you at some point, and that certainly is an announcement that should be made, but I think at this point, I don't know about you, but I rarely see people listen to it anymore. And the visitors, the tourists that we have, are focused on getting in and out of the train, and they may not be listening to that either. So either that may be relegated to something to consider to leave off, or else move to later on in the announcement series.
Well, I will certainly view that. Let's see. If I take it out of that particular part of the announcement, or we take it out of that particular part, then it will probably have to wait till the end. But then, you know, after that, it says this is a yellow line train to Huntington. Then the next stop is Eisenhower. Should it come then? When boarding, please move to the center of the car.
Could you repeat the sequence again? This is Darnese.
No problem.
7000 train off, right?
Yeah, we took the 7000 series car off.
Yeah, so could you repeat the what's happening there? The sequences?
No problem. It's doors opening. Step back to allow customers to enter. Then this is the line that Stephen was talking about. When boarding, please move to the center of the car. And then there's only two more left. That is, this is a yellow line train to Huntington. The next stop is Eisenhower. So if I take it out of the middle of that, where should I place it? At the end?
I think this, we should keep it where it is.
Well, this is Phil. I suggest getting rid of it. The car move to the center of the car. I've lived here for 20 years, and I still don't know where the center of the car is. The center of the car, do you mean between the two doors? Do you mean between the front and the back of the car? Do you
front
mean halfway between the two sets of doors? And it's a worthless statement, and the most important statement is what line it is and what the next stop is. So if you start out by saying the doors are opening, please move away from the doors to permit people to enter and exit. This is a yellow line train towards wherever.
Yep.
And the next stop is, those are the critical announcements. The move to the center of the car, nobody knows where the center of the car is. I mean, a lot of people think it's the center doors.
Yeah, that's true. And you know,
this is Rico. I also have a question. This is Rico. When are we doing training? Do you know when that's happening?
Which training, Kerry? Rico, which training are you talking about?
I think for new members, I'm not sure.
I think he's talking about appeals.
Appeals training, Rico, that is scheduled. Give me one quick moment. I believe it's on July 27th. So that's going to be a separate invite. I will email everyone when we get there.
Okay, thank you.
May I quickly comment with a follow-up to what Phil said? You know, at this point, I think almost out of self-preservation in getting in and out of the cars, I too have over the years questioned what the center of the car is. And I think most riders out of self-preservation try to stay within reason as close to the doors as possible if they can. And I think for those reasons, that could be removed or at least relegated to perhaps the end. Just my opinion.
Okay, it's a good opinion. What about rewording it?
Well, the major thing, this is Phil, again, the major thing that you want is to get people away from the doors. Not clustering around, particularly people with suitcases or people with bicycles or whatever. And so instead of saying, please move to the center of the car, please move away from the doors so people will be able to exit and enter.
Okay.
Similarly, this is Anthony.
I can give you a little short history. The general purpose in the beginning was to keep people from clustering around the door when they board. Sometimes, you know, when they board, they just stand around the doorway and the quote unquote center had not been filled, but people standing near their doorway so they can get on and off. But I will definitely bring this back to the group and see what they say about it and report back to you. Okay?
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's a noble, I mean, those phrases are noble. They're very important. But I'm afraid at this point, they're not adhered to and they're not really understood. And most important, they take up from the information that comes after those two long announcements, which are more critical than that.
Yes, for vision people, the most important thing is what line is it and where is it going? I mean, that's critical for them.
Sounds good. Now, the elevator outage was an issue that you asked about before. We put emphasis on the monitoring compliance because we do get the rail train operators announces every 20, we remind them every 20 minutes of any rail outage, elevator outage. So they in turn are to make announcements concerning those. So we will definitely, we have been monitoring and making sure people are compliant. But I would like your feedback if you don't think it's been happening, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think right now I'm the one that usually complains, but with the COVID epidemic, I haven't been on a train in 3 months.
Right, like most people.
Yes, I can't tell you.
Yes. Okay, well, we'll hold on to that until we start riding again. But it's something we need to make sure that we are complying with, okay?
Yeah, no, that's a great announcement that they say the elevator is out and in which direction it is, so people know that they can get off and bypass and whatever.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. That's what I have for today, unless you want me to take back some other issues that you might have.
If no one else has any comments, I mean, I'm fine. But if anybody else has any comments, please make those now. Otherwise, we can move on to the next item.
Thank you again.
No problem. Yes, thank you. I didn't know that.
Thank you, Donald.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Barbara. I have a question.
Sure. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi, sir. I would like to know...
Barbara, he just left.
I came back.
He's here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks for coming back. I am one of those vision impaired people.
Okay.
And I would like to have the announcements made before the train actually pulls up, like ideally 30 seconds or as it's pulling in. It seems not as of late, because I'm with Phil. I haven't been on the train in a while. However, it's been making the announcements of which train it is after it's been stopped for a number of seconds, and then we're having to scramble to try and get on.
Hmm. Okay,
this
happened because we're using mostly 7Ks, and 7K should play out in its entirety before the doors close. That's one of our requirements. So that I will need to probably turn over to our QA department, had them do some audits, see whether or not that's been taking place.
Yeah, this is Phil, Barbara. What they do is there is a pause before the doors open, and that's when the announcements start. If they start the announcement when the train is coming into the station, it's very noisy.
Well, I'm not going to go any further with this, but whatever it is, it's too late.
Okay.
May I make a comment?
Steve, bear with me. This is Anu. Doris has had her hand up. Doris, go ahead, and then we'll take a question from Steve.
Doris is muted. Anu, Doris is muted.
Doris, go ahead. You're not.
Oh, okay.
You're muted. Yeah.
Okay. On this question, I know that I had lots of comments on this, and I believe what's happening now, at least last time I was in a metro station, was that just as Phil said, the train pulls up and we had requested that it would speak its line, meaning color, its destination, and then open the doors. But the last time I was on a train, it was not doing this. So Barbara, in that sense, is right that and then we had also Anthony will remember specifically spelled out, the AAC specifically spelled out the order of the announcement. Has that changed? Because I haven't heard it change since, you know, I haven't been on one since March, but in March, the order had not yet been changed, and we wanted the order to be the line and the destination so that blind people didn't have to scramble to get in, because I've experienced what Barbara enunciated as well. But my memory is that the train would pull up and, like you said, would say would begin speaking when it was in the that whatever however many seconds it is hesitation. But I think all it was saying at that time was what the station was, and so and doors opening, and that's not what we need. We need to know that what the train is.
Hey, if we take out the when boarding, please move to the center of the car, then you have the sequence, because it goes doors opening, step back to allow customers to enter. Then if we take out the boarding part, it will say, this is a yellow line train to Huntington. And then it will say, the next stop is, this is after the train is already on the platform getting ready to close now. It's not on approach.
But this is Doris, can you still hear me? Yeah, yes. The that's exactly what I recall, and the thing is that the message, you know, doors opening, you can hear the doors opening. The message, doors opening, move to the center of the car, is wasted time for us, and I know that even. Brian Miller specifically mentioned this in testimony to the AAC himself. So, you know, after he had no longer been on the AAC, he actually mentioned this in testimony.
This is Tino. If I could interrupt, I can't see you, you can't see me, even if I raise my hand. But I'd like to mention that included in the rail car handbook is the order of announcements. And I don't know if Mr. Goings has seen that. Anthony, you recall that we had that at the one of the last parts of the handbook.
Yes.
Mr. Goings, have you seen the order and the verbal message that is given in materials that we prepared?
Not from what you prepared, no.
But
if you have a handbook, I would like to see it.
Well, then I suggest that.
For
I suggest then that we send you that, and you'll have both the order as well as the message given in this regard.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anthony, did you have anything?
Oh, I was just right. I was just going to say that the order in which I have in the file I just pulled up from that original letter to the board and what we submitted is exactly what Mr. Goings has just stated. So we can send. I definitely think we should send him the handbook, but it looks like from what he has said, it matches what we had in the order that we had it in.
This is Anu. Actually, Donald, you received something, it's been a few months. So there has been no change since then that I'm aware of in the order.
Okay.
So what you had from the past is, that, to my knowledge, there has not been any change.
All right, well, we'll have a discussion about the when boarding move to the center of the car. We'll discuss that. Okay, report back.
Steve, did you have any comments?
Yes, I do. Mr. Goings, a question. Do we say the name of the station anywhere at the beginning of the announcements? Just remind me, do we say the name of the station as the first thing in the announcements?
You mean while we're sitting at the platform?
Yeah, like the name of the, when the station or when the train arrives at the platform. And is there the name of the station, like let's say it's arriving at the DuPont Circle station.
Yes.
You say DuPont Circle?
Yes, it will say DuPont Circle, doors opening on left or
okay.
Right.
Okay, that's good. You know, I just want to share with you something that we may not be able to do technologically, but in Paris, what they do is about 10 seconds before the train arrives at a station, they have it electronically programmed to announce the name of the station that's heard on the train. And so people start to get ready to move to the doors. So when the station's name is announced, when the doors are just about ready to open, the people know the station. I know the biggest problem I have is sometimes if I can't read the lettering in the cars, I don't know without looking out the doors where we are. And I'm just raising that as a question or a concern.
Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you for that.
Doris has her hand up. Doris, go ahead. Doris, do you have a follow-up question or is
she's
your
muted.
Hand up from Claire?
Yeah, I had a problem with mute and unmute.
No problem.
Okay, so my memory last time I was on a train and I took it home almost every night was that the announcement of the next upcoming station would be either right when you were, right after you left the station before you were going to, you know, for each station, they did this for each station, and then, or it would be right in the middle of the trip. They would say the next station stop is blah, blah, blah. And from a, that's when you need it so you can get to the door. And I think that came from comments from the AAC, in fact. So that's when you need it so you get prepared based on your own needs, whether you want to get in front of the door, you know, so you're there and ready to get off, which is what I actually think is safest. And so at any rate, except maybe during rush hour, but at least you're prepared. But I see no need when the train stops at a platform for the train to announce, you know, what station we're at. I think that instead the best and first announcement is which train it is and which direction it's going in, because that gives you time to then, you know, if that's said before any door announcement, and, you know, go to the center of the train, it's over with and you know this is your train. Because if you know, particularly at stations where there's one on one train, immediately that this is not your train, then you'll step back. At least I think most commuters would do that.
Okay. Thank you, Doris.
Mr. Boyne, have you?
Before we can get that, how long before we can get? Because we've been asking for a very long time.
This is Tino again. Are there any more comments or questions, or do you have any further comments, Mr. Boyne?
No, I do not.
Well. If you've heard what we've said, and you'll be able to communicate that with the rest of your team, we'd appreciate it. And we'd certainly appreciate hearing back from you what was finally decided. For now, though, we're over the agenda time. If there's no other comments from either the members or Mr. Boyne, we are about to hear on the inter-car barriers from Robin Hahn. Is Robin Hahn there?
I am. Good afternoon,
yes,
everybody.
Good afternoon. Were you the person who introduced us to the new example of an inter-car barrier back some
no.
months ago?
I was not the new. I was not the person that introduced you to that new barrier, but I was the person that came to your meeting explaining to you that from a procurement standpoint, that that situation wasn't handled properly. So we had to go back out. We sent out a request for information. It's a process that should have been followed the first time. Long story short, it wasn't, so we had to go back and rehandle it to make sure that we were given fair and open competition to the industry. So we sent out an RFI, which is a request for information. We got responses back from 5 different suppliers with their ideas, concepts, so on and so forth. We have now got the what we would call a request for proposal finished. And with COVID-19, it's kind of slowed the process down a little bit. We've all been teleworking, as you know. So as of today, some of us have gone back to the office. So I don't have an answer as to where we're at as far as if we've gotten the responses back from the proposals back from the suppliers, but I can certainly check tomorrow and send out an email to you so that you can, so that you'll know what that status is. I believe everything is ready to go as far as all the specifications and all the needs that we want. Now it's a matter of getting prototypes in, but like I said, with the COVID-19, it's slowing things down because right now we're not allowed to bring suppliers in, you know, safety for our employees. But we are still working on it. It's not something that we left go by the wayside. So I can send an email tomorrow letting her know where we're at.
Thank you. Let me mention that our vice chair of the full committee, Denise Rush. She and I viewed at a station an intercar barrier, and we liked it. And we also mentioned if they could make some minor adjustments, we would approve it. And then the full committee decided to approve what Denise and I reported on. What is the status of that one, or is that one?
That's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm telling you. That's the problem. The problem was that there was only one supplier contacted to make that design. And that is against the rules. It's against FTA rules. Whenever we go out for something like that, it has to go out to the public for fair and open competition. So we basically had to start all over again. And we have to give the other suppliers an opportunity to present their prototypes to us. You may be surprised. Somebody else may come in with something even better than what you saw. But
well, that's great. That's really terrific. At the same time, just for our information, is the company that produced what we viewed at a station, is that company still part of the 5 vendors that have responded?
Yes, sir. They are.
Okay. Very good.
But like I said, the problem with it is whenever we do this, and this is something that the group that I work for is where I qualify suppliers and new suppliers and new parts. And we really have to open up our supplier database to give, you know, small businesses, DBEs and everything else an opportunity to do this stuff. And like I said, the people that started this really didn't realize that they didn't handle it quite properly. So we basically had to start over. But yes, the company that you saw, their intercar barrier, is still interested and they're submitting a proposal as well.
Very good. So you'll let us know when there is some further development?
I will. And I apologize for the slowdown, but with COVID-19 and having to deal with suppliers and, you know, the company's very concerned about the safety of their employees as well as the ridership. So the less contact we have with outside sources, it's just more protection. So it's like any other business around, it's kind of slowed the process down a little bit, but we're still working on it. Like I said, I was back to work today for the first time in 4 months. So hopefully we can kind of get things moving a little faster, get the wheels turning a little faster now.
Well, thank you very much, Robin. And if there are no questions from the bus rail subcommittee,
Tina, yes. We do have 2 questions. I see Dr. Posner's hand up and then Barbara. Dr. Posner, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Phil Posner for the translators. Robin, when you finally do decide on the barrier you're using, you let the people that are designing the 8,000 cars know which one it is?
Absolutely. What we do is we'll bring in what this, the plan is that once we go through the proposals, we'll say there's five suppliers and only three meet the criteria or specifications we're looking for, right? So let's just say that we go through a little bit of a process of elimination by looking at reliability, durability, and everything else. So let's say out of five, three of them are what we would consider acceptable. So then what we do is we have them actually, we mount their prototype on the train. We would not only bring in the ADA community, but we'd bring in the maintenance group and everybody else, and they would go through. And then we would probably run that barrier up and down the main line for probably 30 days, maybe 60, to make sure that it's not going to break, that we're not going to have, because if, you know, there's a risk in those as well, just like anything else. You don't want it breaking and coming off while trains running down the track. You don't want it cracking. We want some, if we're going to invest the money in this, we have to make sure that the lifespan of these is, you know, we'd like to see them last at least 10 years, right? At least. Right. But, so we want to go through the proper testing, the proper qualification before we make a final determination. But as I said, we'll do the same thing that you went through the first time. We'll have them mounted on the train. We'll have the ADA community come in, look at them, review them, give us their opinions, because during this time, we still have an opportunity to work with suppliers to say, well, we like this, but we need you to do this, or that's not going to work. We need to change that. It gives us an opportunity to still work with them to get us the best design, not only for the train and protection of the ADA community and all of our passengers. It's like I said before, you know, we have a lot of kids that ride the train and everything else. And my concept is it prevents everybody, or at least you attempt to eliminate any falls between the cars for anybody.
Understood. Barbara, did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I did. I would like to request on behalf of the low vision community, that is partially sighted community, for you guys to bring back the, or incorporate in a new design, the neon, the colors, because I've had some feedback from those in the low vision community who ride the rails that they wanted to know what happened to those, the colors. And I remember out when I was at the Greenbelt Metro Rail Station with several others, that was what we requested. And then all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but it kind of got changed back to the chains. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, perhaps a lot more riders with low vision on the rails than there are totally blind. So I don't think this is something that we could ignore.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I believe that that's part of our proposal, is that we want bright colored neon, either striping or the really bright reflective tape, so that so that it stands out, so that people can actually see it. Yes. To me, if it's silver or black, it's not as visually, it's not as visible as it is if the colors are bright.
Right.
Whether it's safety orange or neon yellow or whatever, but we need something to make it stand out.
Right, and I had sent some documentation examples of what would be good for our group to Chris Blake.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to get in touch with Chris and ask him for that information. I will do that tomorrow.
Thank you. Yeah, because once the brake dust starts flying all around, it covers up the gray and makes it even more unnoticeable.
Okay, I will definitely call Chris tomorrow and ask him to send me that information that we can make sure that becomes part of the proposal.
Thank you.
Barbara, you'll have to share that with the bus rail subcommittee as well, because we haven't seen it. On the other hand, just to backtrack, the clamshell barrier, which was first placed on the 7000 series, was black, and we made them at least change that to different colors. And then the intercar barrier that Denise and I saw on station, that was reflective and in different colors too. So we're getting there. But Barbara, if you could share with us what you've been talking about, and we'll share it with Robin. Are there any other questions? If not, we can move on to the scooter hubs discussion.
We have Doris has her hand up. We can take one last question from Doris.
Yes, and just a comment that I think we need to be able to test out the contrast underground as well as above ground for the reflective, because it needs to be high contrast, like, for example, orange or red would not, or green, would not show up as much in underground. It has to compete with the very bright lights coming up from the platform, as well as on the 7,000 trains, the bright lights that come from the inside the doors. But
that's an excellent point, Doris. That's a very excellent point.
How are you going to balance the judgment between design features versus cost? Which will get more priority?
We always go best price, technically sound. So basically what it is, it's the technical piece that takes the priority over the cost. We want to make sure, like I said, we want the ADA community to, as you said, Doris, and that was a great point about the lights, the color of it down in the tunnel and how it's going to reflect down there. So to me, that's a prime time for us when we put these prototypes on, that we have the ADA community both in an outdoor platform as well as in a tunnel platform, so that we can really make sure that we're giving you what you need. We also want to make sure that they're durable and reliable.
Robin, our point of view is safety first. Correct. So just keep that in mind. Our view is safety first. And let me mention that when Denise and I viewed the most recent version of an inter-car barrier, it was only outdoors and in sunlight. So the next time, please have it arranged so that we can see it both outside, but as well inside a station.
I can guarantee you I will.
Okay. Thank you, Robin. If there's any other comment, let's move on to the next item. Any other comment? Any last comment? Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day, folks.
You too, Robin. Is Mr. David Goodman and Veronica Nisbirajan there?
Yes, Veronica is here.
Yeah, this is David. Let me turn on my camera for you. Where's my video?
Well, I can't see it anyway.
Okay. Well, my camera's on for anybody who cares.
Sure. Great.
I'll tee up the conversation and for Veronica, and she'll explain what her company is doing for this process.
Can you tell us what company you're with, David?
Oh yeah, sorry. I'm with Jacobs, which is there's a lot of consultants who work for WMATA. Jacobs is one of the consultants. Okay. My role is to help the folks in the land and parking office, and I'm specifically working on bicycle and pedestrian access and mobility, and in this case, scooters as well, but a lot of bicycle parking and that kind of thing. So I'm
sure.
Helping.
Do you want to introduce Veronica so she can identify her company?
Yeah, Veronica, why don't you introduce yourself?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Veronica Davis. I am one of the co-owners of Inspire Green. We are located in Washington, D.C. We are a woman-owned and small-owned business. I heard you earlier talking about the DBE businesses, and so we are thankful to be able, through the DBE program, working with Jacobs on this particular project. We do transportation planning. We've done a lot of work around the district. Now, one of the things that might be interesting to this particular group is we did work with the District Department of Transportation on their Access DC plan. So working with, working around focusing on persons with disabilities and older populations to come up with ways to really improve the transportation network and developing a process for which DDOT can consider those things moving forward.
Very good. Now, do you want to tell us more than that? Where do things stand and what does scooter hubs mean actually?
Mm-hmm. I'll introduce that. So you may be aware that, you know, shared mobility devices like Capital Bike Share bikes and electric scooters are very popular around the DC area, and people are using them naturally to get to Metro. You probably are aware that a lot of times there's no specific place to park these. That's part of their feature, right? Is you should be able to park them almost anywhere, except sometimes people don't park them in the best locations. Sometimes they wind up in the middle of the sidewalk. Sometimes they are parked well and then they fall over, right? And then they get in the way of pedestrians on the sidewalk. WMATA's aware that this is a problem, that there's a lot of scooters that get ridden to Metro stations and then they get sort of dumped in different locations because there really is no preferred location set up for where people should put them. So the idea that WMATA is looking into is if we could designate specific areas near the Metro station entrances that are clearly identified for scooters, then people who are coming to the station will use those areas exclusively, or hopefully exclusively, to put their scooters in so they don't wind up in places where we don't want them, right? We don't want them blocking the sidewalks. We don't want them blocking the entrances to the stations. We don't want them blocking bus stops or bus shelters. So we're trying to provide an additional service. And so we've asked Inspire Green to develop concepts for what these scooter, we're calling them scooter corrals or mobility hubs. So we haven't quite settled on a name for them yet. But what these scooter corrals look like physically, what they would look like, how big they might be, and also to look at options for where they would be located. depending on the setting, right, some could be in the street, in say, in what might be a parallel parking space, similar to what the District of Columbia and some other jurisdictions are doing with bike parking, right? Sometimes they take a car parking space out and you can put a lot of bikes there. You could probably put even more scooters in there. Some locations, there is no on-street parking that you can take, right? So those have to be off-street. A lot of times they're on the sidewalk. Many sidewalks have planting strips or utility strip, you know, that zone between the curb and the main part of the sidewalk. Sometimes that's big enough to put scooter parking in, although there's also a lot of other constraints on that space as well. Another option is putting scooter parking in on Metro property itself, in the, say, the more suburban stations. So there could be an area in the on the plaza where we can put scooter hubs. And so Inspire Green is looking at different locations, how to site them, and they're putting together criteria for helping WMATA decide where's the best place to put them, what they should look like, what elements they should have, which we can talk about, and we, Veronica, can also show you those as well. And also, what was my last point I was going to make about them? Well, that's probably,
well, why you're thinking.
Yeah.
Why you're thinking? Let me just quote Council Member Mary Che. She said, and was quoted in the Washington Post back in November. She said, "Many scooter users weave in and out of pedestrians on the sidewalk at high speeds, do not follow important safety rules, ride while inebriated, and routinely discard scooters that block pedestrian walkways, private driveways, and handicap accessible ramps." she went on farther, but we understand that the kinds of overall problems she indicates, and specifically the problems that people with disabilities and the elderly face. You mentioned that there might be a car space, a parking space for a car that you could place a scooter corral. Mind you, though, that we hope that if they are in the street, that they in no way prevent another car driven by a person with a disability from being able to open the door enough to get their wheelchair out, that kind of thing. So maybe, Virginia, you could tell, Veronica, I'm sorry, you could tell us something about the design you have in mind for scooter corrals, either indoors or even in the WMATA property.
Yes, so I will start by talking about the overall, where do you put the corral? Because David mentioned, you know, there's a lot of different options. However, we actually did a look. We looked at about half of the stations just to see what's the siding criteria, what are the basic clearances, taking into account, you know, things like making sure the pedestrian walkways are clear, making sure there's a clearance to the escalators and the elevators at the station, making sure there's a clearance to all the bus stops, tree boxes, fire hydrants, curb ramps, all those things. And one of the challenges, and it's a thing that David and I have been talking about, is some of the stations may need to have a rethink of what's around them. A lot of the optimal places to put scooter parking, there are news boxes everywhere. And so David and I have been having a lot of conversations around that. And the newspaper boxes, like the newspaper boxes, like Washington City Paper and all of those.
Understood.
There's no more city paper.
A little more than Washington City Paper, and then there's like the free housing and all of those. But, you know, the challenge is often they are in the ideal location. We even looked that there were places where there could be space to put a scooter parking. However, we still felt like that was an optimum location just based on human nature and how people walk. And so trying to avoid those types of conflicts. So one of the things that we've been grappling with is that for most of the, at least the stations in downtown DC, there really is no space. And trying to, again, like I said, rethink what the actual station, what goes around the station. As David mentioned, we originally thought where there was no space on the sidewalk, we would look in the street. But for a lot of the stations where it is really constrained, there really is not an in-street option because of the parking restrictions or because of potential bike lane projects that are in the pipeline. On the WMATA property, we do have some of the bigger stations. There is a lot more opportunity to place them away and out of the path of, you know, just, you know, for people walking. And so we've come up with at least some siting criteria, and largely the biggest recommendation is keeping them out of the pedestrian path. Just from, you know, just how human nature is and how you come up the escalator. You know, there could be a plaza and there could be a lot of space in front of that plaza away from the escalator. But human nature is I come off the escalator and I may walk straight, and we don't want to walk people into the scooter hubs. So that is what we have been working on just from a siting criteria standpoint and providing different examples in our design guideline for that.
Okay, very good.
Any questions? As far as the design of the scooter, we are still in very much the preliminary phases. What we are looking at would be a 16 feet by 4 feet, 5 inches box. There's a lot of, we are still exploring what materials could be used to delineate that there is a box for someone that might be low vision or no vision that's using a cane. We are looking at the potential for basically like little wheel stops. They're typically, you know, parking lots where there's like the concrete wheel stop so that you don't drive over into the sidewalk. So looking at using rubber wheel stops also as a way to denote that there's a presence of something, so it would be detectable by a cane. But we're still doing research on materials and then figuring out the best way to demarcate that someone has come across a scooter, but then also making sure people can still get the scooters in and out of the box. What else? Oh, the other thing that we were asked to explore, which we did, and we are going to be providing that information to WMATA, is the possibility of a almost like a hitching post, you know, basically scooter parking.
Could you say that again?
Physical. I said a hitching post, but that's probably very like wild, wild west. But essentially something that that would hold the scooters upright. So some type of a parking structure, and there is scooter racks out there that would keep the scooters upright and keep them from falling over. So we have explored a few options and presenting those to WMATA to see what may or may not work.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Wild West, but one of the things that Council Member Mary Che says is that it is the Wild West when it comes to scooters in urban areas. They cause so many problems, and there's almost no rules. I've examined some of the guidance that other areas have suggested, as well as DC's, and I'm hoping that some of these problems can be addressed by you, but you're limited really to parking them in corrals as opposed to dealing with some of the other problems. Some of those problems could be if the scooters are not placed in corrals or correctly placed, do the scooters have the kind of identification registration on them, not only visible to those who can see them, but also in Braille, so that someone who has a problem with a particular scooter can know which company to call about the problem faced by this particular person. Will there be some way that if scooters are not standing in a corral or in a hitching post, such as you described, are there some ways that the customers of WMATA can call the company and get it straightened out, or a station manager can do that? These are some of the problems that we face, and in fact, I don't think that you're getting into it, but our lawyer ombudsman, David, he has even heard of complaints about scooters that are ridden around on the station platforms underground. These are the crazy things that we've been worried about, which I guess you wouldn't be addressing. You're just trying to figure out how best to have them corralled or standing upright. Can you tell us, give us some time frame for your figuring out a design for the station and when eventually they might be available at the station?
I can answer the first question, and then I'm going to let David handle the second part. So for the first part, we are currently, we have some concepts that we just shared with David today, which still need to be shared with WMATA. So we'll probably have a back and forth to refine those. And then once we have that, thinking about materials that would be used and coming up with a brief cost estimate. So we are scheduled, I believe, by mid-August to deliver a final report that outlines what the design should be, the different material options and their estimated cost, the different ways that the scooters could stand upright, you know, the different rack options and how much that would cost, and then the siting criteria. And then I will hand that back over to David to answer the second part regarding when to expect implementation at the station.
Yeah, it's hard to know when any of these things are going to get implemented. Ideally, you know, the work that we're doing is for a simple to implement type of solution. So nothing with a lot of custom designed parts. For the most part, we're trying to work with simple materials like bollards and curb stops, you know, like Veronica mentioned, and paint. There's interesting, there's stickers like that you can actually, that have sort of a tactile surface to them. So they're non-slip surfaces that you can put on directly on the sidewalk, to delineate these spaces. So we're looking at using materials like that. So at least the procurement process shouldn't be overly onerous, but, not really quite sure. I think, you know, WMATA would like these things in place now because they know there's an existing problem now. So there's definitely urgency with it. But I couldn't even begin to speculate about it, when you'll actually see these hitting the streets. Wish I could.
Steve? I'd like to make a comment. The Office of ADA Policy and Planning has made recommendations in reference to these corrals. We've asked for three sides of the corrals to have some protection so that somebody, even if the device falls down, people are not going to trip over them, and on three locations. And then on one side, we recommended a tactile element that lets you know that there's something behind that tactile element, some sort of a metal strip at the bottom, so that if you are caning, you will feel the space as there being something else behind it. And when we invited David and Veronica to this meeting, we wanted you as the advisory committee to provide some feedback in reference specifically to the corral. All the other political issues that we've discussed are different, but they're only dealing with the corral itself. So if you would have some input in reference to that, that would be great.
Okay, and I see some hands up. Anthony, Phil Posner, and Doris, and I believe Steve, you're saying, trying to make some comments, so I'll put you on the list. Anthony, go ahead.
Actually, I just put my hand down because I think my question was answered, so I'll let you go on to the next person.
Okay, Dr. Posner?
I'll be quick. We have a beautiful corral outside the Virginia Square Metro stop that is totally unused. And I know that's not your job to design them, but hopefully WMATA will look into some of the things like the electric fences that shuts off the scooters when they get within 50 feet of a metro station, and they can't just dump it on the sidewalk, which is what they do. A number of stations already have very nice corrals, they just don't get used. And so that's my only comment, is hopefully WMATA will look at other ways of keeping them away from the entrance to the stations and away from the sidewalks. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment. Can I respond?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you very much. We know exactly what corral you're referencing. And one of the challenges of some of the corrals that we've noticed is that when you are coming in and out of the station, you won't know it's there in some cases, because that particular one is, you know, hidden underneath a tree. So one of the things that we did look at is, one, both the visibility from the entrance and exit of the station for someone trying to get to a scooter corral. The other thing we are looking at is signage, so that people will know where the corral is located and know to put one there. I think sometimes, you know, people install things like a corral, but if I am not a regular commuter to that station, I may not know that it's there. Or if I don't come through that entrance, I may not know it's there. So we are looking at signage that is not intrusive, but that would also give that level of information when people exit the state, enter and exit the station.
Okay, thank you, Veronica. Doris, go ahead and make your comment, please.
I'm sorry, I don't realize that you unmute me and then I have to unmute myself again. At any rate, I was wondering in this study to what degree you are looking at, and I think you should be looking at, the designs for the corrals and their placement in the jurisdictions, particularly, I know this is the case in Northern Virginia, where there is a county or city ordinance that governs the placement of corrals, because that's some of them have already local ordinances about how they're designed and where they're placed. And I've noticed in Clarendon before COVID came on, but after the ordinance was adopted, that that the corrals were keeping the scooter users and the electric bike users from clustering around the elevator entrance at Clarendon, as they were doing when it was, you know, open, an open situation. And so I'm wondering, in part, whether WMATA may be duplicating something that the jurisdictions are doing and bringing maybe, you know, making provision for the scooters to be closer to the station than the local ordinances were seeking to do based on their comments from citizens. The same thing is true in Alexandria as well, where the scooter corrals are supposed to be off the pedestrian rights of way and away from the stations, although King Street, you know, is newly opening. So I haven't been over there to see, you know, what's there. But I'm also concerned about the stations out further, like on the Orange Line or perhaps on the Silver Line, but particularly on the Orange Line, where there are pedestrian walkways that take you to the garages, but they also take you to the bus bays and the bus stops. And I would be concerned about placement of any corral in those pathways. And I'm asking that you consider, you know, recessing these corrals away from the stations. And I know that the human impulse for the riders is to ride it up to as close as they can get to the station and drop it off, and then even if it's a corral, and go into the station. That's what it's all about, getting me all the way there, right? So those are things that I hope you're considering, and if you hadn't considered what's in those ordinances, to do that. And last thing with the tactile thing, any tactile markings, need to consider that people who are blind or vision impaired use different types of canes with different types of tips, and often some of them are less tactily sensitive than others. So I think it's, and then often people who have low vision may be carrying a cane but have it folded up. So I think all those things need to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your comments. So to address...
Oh, also, I wanted to, since I'm the representative of the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, I'm wondering if you're bringing it to their Access for All committee, because they have been definitely monitoring and working with both Maryland, D.C. and Virginia jurisdictions, and if WMATA is going to be implementing this across the tri-state region, it might be good to do some kind of presentation to the AHA as well.
Hmm. No, that's good to know.
Yeah, so to address some of the comments that you had, so the first was around other jurisdictions that have corrals. We did meet with pretty much everyone. We've met with DDOT, we've met with the City of Alexandria, we met with Arlington County, we went out to Tyson's and met with Fairfax County, we met with the Tyson's Partnership, we've met with the soon-to-be National Landings bid, formerly known as Crystal City. So we did meet with all of the different jurisdictions and people.
Hello?
Adjacent, if you will, organizations at the beginning of this process. Oh, can you hear me? We met with them at the beginning of this process to, one, understand their design and just to have a conversation to make sure that we weren't duplicating effort, number one, and two, making sure that whatever we came up with would be allowed by that jurisdiction. And even as an example, earlier this week, we've been going back and forth with Alexandria about one of their specific stations, looking at not only the scooter corral, but the potential of relocating the bike share off the sidewalk. And creating a hub with the bike share and the scooter corral. And that conversation was taking place last week. So we have been working with the jurisdictions so that we do not duplicate that effort. And even like the Orange and Silver Line, like we did meet with Fairfax County and the Tyson's Partnership, particularly with Tyson's Partnership, there's a lot of private interest that may have an interest in doing something similar. So we have had conversations with them. Thank you very much for your comments about the different types of tips and the tactile marking. I know that David and I were talking recently about some potential ways to make sure that we mark the box so that it meets that standard. And I believe David noted the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments Access for All Committee. So I'll let him address that.
Yeah, probably
Veronica. Veronica, could you tell us who established the corrals in Virginia that were just mentioned? And I understand that there is a corral at DuPont Circle. Who set those up?
So the corrals there's corrals at Virginia Square, and those were done by Arlington County.
Because they're in the street and in the public right of way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the challenge at the localities. I'm sorry.
Courthouse as well has a corral, but it's recessed because that was a big place. I worked down there. That was a big place where people put them in front of the elevator.
And there's one at DuPont Circle too, apparently.
Yeah, and that one would have been implemented by DDOT. For our purposes, we are strictly focused on right at the WMATA property. So we have looked at streets, you know, immediately adjacent to WMATA property, but we're sitting in a very tight box to look for placement of the scooter corral. But continue to work with the jurisdictions.
One of the opportunities that WMATA has that the jurisdictions don't, of course, is instead of getting near the metro station, we could actually put our scooter corrals at the metro station, as close or as far from the escalator and elevators as we think is appropriate. So, you know, for instance, that situation of Virginia Square, where it was placed in a pretty out of the way corner of the site. You know, part of the problem, I think, is as Veronica mentioned, people come to the Virginia Square Metro. You know, you're scanning the space in front of you. You see the escalator. You see some bike racks. You see some lockers, I think, parked cars, trees, and you see a Capital Bike Share station. And you may not realize that right behind the Capital Bike Share station is an empty box on the curb space. And you might think that's just a car parking space, but it happens to be a scooter corral. So it's sort of it's a victim of its own understated design. You know, it's very subtle, it's very understated, and it's in kind of an out of the way corner on the site. So one of the things that we're trying to resolve is getting, and I think Doris mentioned this in her comments, getting the scooters as reasonably close to the entrance that it's very intuitive. You know, we want scooter users to be able to intuitively understand where they should be going. If you have to go to a site, go to a station, stop, scan around and look for a sign that tells you where to go, then it's probably not designed very well. People on scooters are just like people walking or other pedestrians. You just want things to be direct, straightforward, and easy. And when you're getting to a station and you're getting off your scooter, you know, if we could make it easy but safe, that, you know, that's the niche that we're trying to fill. We don't want them to be so convenient that they block other users. That would be counterproductive, right? But we don't want them to be in such an innocuous place that people won't use them. Until there is, you know, there's the potential for geofencing, which we keep hearing about, but the technology isn't quite there yet, that you can designate a specific rectangle in space that says, this is the only allowed parking space, you know, within 100 feet of the metro station. You know, until that kind of technology is in place, the best that we can do is provide something that is attractive to people to use, so they will want to use that instead of just randomly picking a spot. So that's the design challenge that they're trying to work on.
Just for a point of clarification, up to now, we've been talking about corrals or hubs at metro rail stations. Your assignment doesn't include the bus stops and the bus shelters, does it?
Well, it does insofar as we need to make sure that we provide adequate clearance around all of those things. So we're not going to be blocking bus shelters or access to a bus shelter. But there aren't any scooter hubs planned for specifically for servicing bus stop locations. They're mostly in service of metro accessing the rail.
Well, there are a lot of problems that we've discussed that affect bus stops and bus shelters.
Oh, yeah.
But Anu, did you have somebody with a hand up?
Yes.
Steve wanted to make a comment, and then we have Patrick, his hand is up. So Steve, go ahead.
Steve? Hello?
Okay, thank you. ISIL and Corral, although it's right across the street, I think that the comment you made, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good. The comment that you made that the corrals need to be as close to the metro entrances, but without obstructing them, is important. And I notice that these newspaper racks, many of them that once were filled with papers, I think over the last 3 or 4 months are not and may no longer be in use. And that's a possibility for usage because some of those racks are quite long. I think also you mentioned signage, and you know, as these become more and more usage prevalent, you might suggest a sign at the entrance to at least the major metro stations saying scooters with an arrow.
Yep.
And bicycles with another arrow, perhaps, to show people exactly where they, you know, exactly where they are. One last thing, very important. There needs to be policies and procedures once you've established the framework for it, so the riders know what they're supposed to be doing, and there's a measure of accountability. And I think that's probably in conjunction with DDOT. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, Patrick, you have your hand up. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Anu. I got here a little bit late, so you can hopefully mark me as present.
I did.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I assume both of our panelists here are this first rodeo. Can you tell me what they, you know, once we get these corrals in, what we can expect as far as outcomes, usage? It's going to fix the situation somewhat. What has your experience been in that area?
I mean, how it will influence scooter usage, for instance?
Influence scooter usage would be the large top, you know, the large thing to discuss, but how about helping to corral the clutter is more, I think, what we're concerned about. As a blind person, I've tripped over a few of these, and I know other people, like folks in wheelchairs, just stopped in tracks. So,
touch of experience. Yeah, don't have direct experience with, you know, putting these in and then seeing the great results that come out of them. But we do know that, you know, if there is a specific place to put these things and it's well located, people are more likely to put their scooter there. Lacking that, people just put them almost anywhere. Veronica, what were you going to say?
Yeah, thank you for that comment. I will say, you know, right now the scooter corrals are still relatively new across the country. And I do know that a lot of the local DOTs are collecting data. So I am hopeful that we will have, you know, better data in the next year or so around usage. I will say, you know, as part of, you know, doing a lot of the background, you know, search to even look at, well, how, one of the questions that we were asked early was how close should it be to the entrance and still allow access. And one of the things that we found is that there really isn't any other transit agency that has taken this proactive approach to having scooter corrals in order to keep them from the entrance of the stations. There are other DOTs that are looking at things, but there really isn't any other transit agency. So this is a lot of uncharted territory, and some of what we have, we'll be putting into the implementation plan is a strategy around metrics.
Oh, that would be great. If you could come back, yeah, that would be wonderful. That would be good for you, but great for us too. We'd love to know if you ever report out that a strategy.
Patrick, we cannot hear you.
I'm sorry.
We cannot hear you.
There I am. I'm sorry. I was going to say thank you for that. That would be very good. Metrics are always good. We'd love to be able to report out that a strategy that we, you know, endorse, let's say, is bearing fruit, and that would be good for you.
Getting back to something that Doris mentioned, I'm sorry, I was just thinking about that. Doris, you mentioned the fact that different people use different kinds of canes, which respond differently to different tactile surfaces. We've been working with Carol and her team, you know, on specific tactile surfaces that would be appropriate. So make sure, you know, that if the ADA folks, WMATA's ADA folks, aren't already aware of these distinctions that you're trying to capture, make sure that they're aware of that so they can share that with us, because we don't want to make too many assumptions and then find out that, you know, you can't assume the same characteristics for all tactile surfaces. So I know, and I know that this is something that we talked about specifically, about what kind of surface delineation. I think we were talking about using, what are we referring to it as? It's an edge delineator, I think it was, or something like that.
It's a guide strip.
The guide strip, thank you. Yeah. A guide strip. There's I know of at least one that's on the Metro platform at Gallery Place. It indicates the transition point from where the end of the 6-car trains are and where the 8-car trains continue. It's embedded, it sticks perpendicular to the platform. It helps delineate an edge. I think that was, it's either that or something very similar was what Carol's staff was recommending.
Okay. Doris, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I was mentioning that what I was trying to mention is that people have different types of cane tips, and sometimes even if the cane comes from the factory with one type of tip, they may change to one that's a bit different. So that I would test it out with that, but I did want to clarify that my comment regarding the location of the corrals is just the opposite of what you said. I'm saying they should be more recessed, more like what's at Virginia Square, and the reason is because in what was actually hours of testimony in Arlington and in Alexandria, and I was at both hearings. People with disabilities, citizens with disabilities, wanted those corrals recessed from the sidewalks around stations, and particularly around the elevator entrances at stations, as well as the escalators. And that's what's in their ordinances, and I think it would be ignoring what the local ordinances are saying if you're saying, well, they need to be as close as they can. And the other thing is you have to take into consideration that in certain localities, the sidewalks on which the metro entrances are located are narrower. They may or may not actually, if their existing sidewalks meet ADA requirements, taken into account, for example, the escalator entrance at Capitol South, and even the elevator entrance at Capitol South. Those are only minimally accessible because I guess they've been redone, so they're kind of minimally accessible in terms of width.
Right. So locations like that wouldn't,
that you take into account. And I'm also concerned about
stations
like East Falls Church and West Falls Church, which are both pedestrian and car accessible. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we're working on is, as you know, every metro station, plaza area, entrance, everyone is a little bit different, right? So we can't really put a standard set of guidelines in place and just sort of leave it at that. So going forward, when it comes time to coming up with implementation, we would look at each station area as its own design study. And we would be working with Carol and her team to confirm appropriate locations. So nobody's going to be, you know, looking at a map on our own and saying, put it there. That's where I'm going to put it. And then we just go into implementation. We will be certain to be careful about that and making sure that we're taking into consideration all the situations that are on the perimeter.
And you know that the Arlington and Alexandria ordinances also prohibit the scooters from blocking entrance to bus stops and bus shelters and such.
Right.
So close to that would not be good.
Okay, well, we have had a great discussion. Dr. Posner, really quickly, did you have any comments? You had your hand up earlier.
No, I took my hand down. It was an enforcement issue, and that's up to the county to work with WMATA. In certain jurisdictions, what they're doing is impounding the vehicles that are not in the corrals, and then they're charging the owners of the vehicles, the companies, for picking them up. And then they can pass that charge on to whoever the renter was. But that's not WMATA's job. That's something you might talk to the jurisdictions about. Works for parking. Cars don't like to have their cars booted.
Are there any last comments? If not, we thank you, David and Veronica. Please keep us abreast of new developments in what you're working on. And thank you again for coming today.
Thank you for having us.
And if you have any follow-up questions, obviously send them through Carol and Anu, and they'll send them our way, and hopefully we can address them. But this is the kind of input that's useful for us. Carol and her team and I had a conversation this morning, and you know, there was a lot of important nuance that they were able to share with us. So it's definitely helpful. So appreciate it. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Veronica.
Yes, and as David Goodman said, if any of the committee members have any further comments, please do forward them to me and we will share it with David and Veronica. So thank you both. It's 5:37. We are slightly behind schedule at this point. So our next topic is committee discussion, which is sidewalks availability leading to metro stations.
Yes, just to start us off, and I don't know if we could, given the pandemic and the inability to see for ourselves some of these things around bus stops and around metro stations, but let me just make this opening comment. I learned by hearing or reading from someone that, you know, public streets, which cost a lot more money than building and maintaining sidewalks, these public streets are really privatized in many ways by parked cars. And now public sidewalks are being privatized by outdoor restaurants, which are understandably trying to stay in business by having tables outside. There may be other kinds of ways that sidewalks and pathways used by pedestrians and people who use wheelchairs and others who have disabilities or are elderly. There are probably many other kinds of problems that come up with the way sidewalks have been and now are being encroached because of the pandemic. Anyway, having said that, has anyone, and Steve, you're in a kind of hot spot down in DuPont Circle where there are many restaurants and other kinds of things that are moving outdoors. Do you or does any other member have some observations that could be made today?
Well, I think
I was hoping.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Tina, what you say is true. There's a real balance between some of these restaurants, which, especially since they can't serve inside, their only means of survival outside is if they don't have their own self-contained patio to move onto the sidewalks. And in, you know, in one area of DuPont Circle, actually onto a side street. And it's a real balancing act right now. And, you know, and I guess there's also a sensitivity issue that all of us need to deal with.
Yeah, well, I think we're sympathetic to the business interest, especially of restaurants, many of which are going to fold. At the same time, these are supposedly public places. And to the extent that folks in wheelchairs or who use other devices to move about and to go to metro stations or to bus stops, to the extent that they can't do so with these obstacles in the way, that's a problem for us. And first of all, I don't know to what extent it's true. I wish we had some way of quantifying the problem. And second of all, I'm not sure how we could recommend that these things be modified or corrected.
Do you know if there's any guidance that's been issued either by the mayor's office or by DDOT regarding how far away from a metro entrance or a congested area is permitted these outdoor tables?
No, I don't. And is David Schaefer here?
Yeah, I'm here.
David, maybe you can look into the legal aspects of this. What protections do people with disabilities or the elderly have when they take a pathway or a sidewalk to go to the, a bus stop or to a metro station? If you could help us out on that for our next meeting, I guess, in September, it would be appreciated. But the pandemic is not going to go away shortly. And in the meanwhile, restaurants are going to be going out there more and more. And there are other things that are obstacles to people with disabilities and seniors when they try to make their way to metro stops and metro buses. So I think we have to look into that. And much of that can't be looked into by we as individual members, because at least like me, I'm staying, you know, indoors until we have a proven vaccine, which won't be until maybe sometime next spring. But for now, if people have some thoughts about this, let's look into it, especially as it pertains to people with disabilities and seniors who are trying to make their way to metro stations and metro buses. Are there any other observations or questions related to this?
Tino, we have three hands up. Anthony, Phil Posner, and then Doris Ray. I just want to mention it's 5:43, so we only have 17 minutes for the meeting. Anthony, go ahead.
I will be very quick. Yeah, I have a few thoughts about this, having been out, not a lot, but you know, enough to know sort of what's going on. I think in terms of this specific issue, it's not going to be, you know, something that we can only sort of contact WMATA about. I think the most important thing that the AAC can do with the community in general is maybe we can put together a list of contact information of what you do when you see, you know, a sidewalk may have a huge pothole in it, or you know, maybe we figure out how to tell people, oh, maybe you should try to talk to the restaurant if it's one that's seriously in your way. I don't know if there's any, you know, other way to do it, at least in my experience, because, you know, as you say, Tino, restaurants expand out to the sidewalk in the warmer weather, and especially with the pandemic, I think it comes down to how much we can educate our peers on where they can go to identify the appropriate authorities and how to have that conversation about, you know, when there's a problem, how do we report it? Because at this point, it seems to me that, like, we know where the problems are and how they're affecting us. But if the people who are causing them, whether, you know, it's by accident or what have you, they have to know, you know, that we're not having a good time. And of course, for bus stops and things like that, I know we can talk to the ADA office, right, at WMATA, but for paths beyond their jurisdiction, we have to sort of figure out how we can help the community sort of have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Another comment?
Dr. Posner?
Yeah, in Arlington, it's a zoning issue. Any restaurant tables that are moved out onto the street have to be approved by the commission. And what they have done in order to get more space, they've actually closed off streets. And all of that is done with public hearings, so we all have input to those. As far as damage to sidewalks, they also have a wonderful website where you can point out problems with crosswalks or street markings. And I can tell you my experience has been very rapid. We had no marking for the disability ramp going to the elevator in Virginia Square. And within a week, they put the crosshatchings in and painted it down. So Arlington does that. And I assume many of the other jurisdictions where you have a good commission are responsive.
Do you remember the name of the website?
Well, yeah, it's arlingtonva.us. And then when you get there, you go to public input and then you pick out which one you want to go to.
Presumably other jurisdictions have a similar kind of website.
Yes, I'm assuming that the good jurisdictions will have that. So, some of the others won't.
Yeah.
We pay a lot of taxes in Arlington, so they try to keep us happy.
Okay. Oh, well, if there are no other comments or questions.
We have Doris. Doris, go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make sure I was on. Apropos the last two comments, actually, Arlington did adopt an ordinance regarding the expansion or and or just use of the sidewalk for outdoor seating, and it specifies the clear space that must be that's required on the street for the passage of wheelchair users and people who use other mobility devices, and so that might be something to investigate. The other question that I have, and I think you should consult also the U.S. Department of Justice, because sidewalks and or streets are part of the part of the Title II entity. You know, they're controlled by the local jurisdiction. But also, I think there's a Title III ADA issue here, which is most of the restaurants are using the street space because they're either, depending on the jurisdiction, prohibited from having indoor service or very limited in terms of indoor service, and so they've, you know, expanded out onto the sidewalks or the streets. And so I think the question that I would put to Department of Justice is, does this constitute, that does by doing so, does this constitute part of the restaurant, and therefore there are ADA requirements for passage, space between tables and passage between rows of tables and access out of the area into and out of the outdoor seating area.
Very good point. Any other observations or questions? If not, we move on to the Ombudsman report. David Schaefer. Hello? Hello.
Tino, just a moment. I'm trying to unmute him. David, go ahead.
Okay. I don't have anything specific for tonight, but I'll take any issues that you guys have.
Anyone have any issues to bring to David?
I do. May I?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thanks. David, perhaps you could recheck. I know we talked about this a few meetings ago, but Next Bus, which was up, is now down more than it's up. And the biggest problem to our constituents is that some buses are running every 40 minutes to sometimes an hour. And so without that information, people who really can't deal with waiting at a bus stop for a long period of time don't know whether the bus is coming in 2 minutes or coming in 40 minutes, and that Next Bus resolves the difficulty. So, you know, I rather than wait, until September, could you just find out and perhaps make mention again that this is a big problem? I don't know whether it's the satellite technology or just the website's technology, but more often than not, it just doesn't appear.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. And, you know, I know you've raised it, and I've raised it twice now with bus transportation, and they don't seem very willing to fix it at the moment. But we can try to put some more pressure on higher up to see if we can't get it started, since bus services is starting to, ramp up again.
David, you know, it's interesting. It worked really well until the determinations of curtailment of routes began. And then that's when it suddenly started to be very sporadic. And it just seemed ironic that that's, so my question a question you might want to follow up on is whether there was something that got input and caused a problem with the Next Bus system when the schedules started to be altered with respect to many of the bus lines.
Yeah, that could have been what happened. I have to try to track down the technical people and get a better answer.
So, Steve, could you tell me, is it because a delayed bus, the timing of the delayed bus's arrival cannot in any way be determined at this bus stop?
That's right. It's not so much that that the information is inaccurate, because it's pretty accurate when it shows up. It's that more often than not, I found that the site is just down, that you go to a particular bus route that you have, you have programmed, and there's just no bus information. And, it has nothing to do with the scheduling, because supposedly the buses are equipped with satellite technology.
Correct.
But does satellite technology benefit the customer who's waiting? I mean, it tell the customer who's waiting when the bus will arrive?
Absolutely, and that's the primary benefit of Next Bus. So the passenger knows when to expect the bus, and also when to take alternative means of transport, depending upon the commitments which they're making using the bus.
Do you have any suggestions to overcome this problem?
Gee, I think it's a fact-finding thing right now, just to see where the problem lies, because it's been in and out actually for the past 3 or 4 months. And it may be a simple issue of technology that when they reprogrammed all the timing of all the bus routes, they did something that inhibited this problem. So it's more fact finding and following up at this point, Tino and David.
Yeah.
Okay.
Carol, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I had a question for Steve. Have you considered looking at bus ETA on our website?
They're tied together. Yeah, they're tied together. You know, ETA. I know what you're talking about. ETA often has an S next to it, which means it's following the schedule, but even that is down.
For example, I picked 1A, for example. It says Vienna Station plus bus bay K, 1 minute, one stop away. Then I click on another one. It says Gallows Road, Fairfax Hospital, emergency ENT, 4 minutes, 1.0 miles away.
And that now sometimes it's up, and it's up right now.
Okay.
Yesterday it was down. I took several buses yesterday and it was down. This morning it was back up. So there's, you know, I think it's more, it's technology and it's really not our domain, but it's affecting, it's affecting the needs of people who really need to know when they should go to the bus stops. And, That's where the follow-up, I think, should be.
All right.
Okay.
Well, if there are no other questions, it's already 5:58. We didn't get to any public comments. I knew no one had signed on for public comment.
Tino, I did not receive any voicemails or email for public comments. Steve actually wanted to make his comment, which he just did. So we have covered his public comment. Besides that, we had none. On the agenda, besides the public comment, we had the work plan. And what I would say or ask for the committee members is that if you have any recommendations that you would like to discuss as it relates to the bus rail subcommittee, please do email them to me so that we can put them on the work plan effective September when we resume after August recess, and we can take it from there.
Okay. And if someone can tell us what the status is of the our commemoration of the 30th anniversary. Where it stands, we passed the resolution, the motion, and Phil, I guess it went into your letter. Hello?
Dr. Posner, I believe he's asked.
Yeah, I got it. Yes, we sent that as an addendum to the letter that went into the board, and you, I believe, has sent it already, so they should have received it.
They have it.
And if so they approve the idea.
Their meeting will be a week from this Thursday, and hopefully they'll discuss it at their meeting.
And if it becomes approved, then we can have the placards made. I don't think that we can do justice to the commemoration unless we actually go to a station like maybe Judiciary Square and symbolically place it next to the Title VI. But anyway, just let us know. I guess you'll be listening in, Phil, to the board meeting.
Yes,
and
I will.
And if they take it up and pass it, just let us know at Paul Semaphore's meeting.
Okay.
If it's okay.
Yes, I also requested that we deliver the report to the board live. And so if they honor that request, I'll actually be speaking to them at the meeting and we can have a little discussion.
Oh, great.
I don't know if they'll respond to that or not, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's 6 o'clock. It's time to adjourn.
No opposition to adjourning. Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.